You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to.
I started off the podcast. I sighed before you could say hello. It's going to be that kind of week.
Is it? Hello and welcome to episode number 141 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Hello!
It feels like forever since we've podcasted. This has been an unusually long break since we did the podcast last Sunday with third Pelton brother, Ben B.
Since we've done like a normal weekly podcast, it's been 6 to 8 months.
That's true. That's how long
we went on hiatus again.
That's how long it's been since we've talked about.
We're feuding and not recording a podcast for 2 years as we did.
That's true. It's been that long since we've talked about UW basketball.
Wow. And it's kind of crazy that we're not talking about UW basketball, but we'll get there.
Because
after the Alex Magoo talk.
This week we're pivoting. We're pivoting away from football. The football season is over in Seattle. The Seahawks are done.
And we're pivoting.
Husky football is done. As we always do, we're pivoting to food. Do we want to start, though, by talking about the beer we have here?
We are drinking from Silver City Brewery in Silverdale, Washington, the Neon Bloom Lemon Wheat Ale, which feels good for this January that kind of feels like spring lately.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
We were both in Los Angeles for the weekend. It was nicer in Seattle than it was in LA.
Yes, it was on Saturday. That is accurate.
Neon Bloom says, it's the spring seasonal. I mean, we're in spring seasonal times.
No, we're not.
We're halfway through January.
Yeah, that doesn't make it spring. It's not spring until March.
You don't know anything about seasons. Neon Bloom, in electrifying spin on the classic American wheat ale, Neon Bloom is enhanced with a lemon drop and citra hops, backed with natural lemon peel for a fresh and fragrant springtime experience. That's why we're drinking it here in the spring in Seattle.
The false spring. I like that I noted as soon as I brought this in, I picked this up on my way over to your house since we did not have beer at the Safeway near your house. And what is the name of our Safeway podcast?
Safeway podcast?
The right way to Safeway. That's the right answer.
Did somebody actually say that?
No, that's just off the dome.
Wow. The right way is we would not have a Safeway podcast because, like,
no, we would not do that again. Fred Meyer admires. We are going to have at some point, and because it was the most appealing thing on the shelves at Safeway, and then you noted that you had purchased it yesterday for the exact same reason.
It stood out. It was like an oasis in the beer aisle at Safeway.
Number one, it's a good looking bottle.
Yes,
we posted a photo of it on the Instagram stories. Which, I mean, if you're not following that. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, what are you even doing at this point? There were some great stories over the weekend, like PeltonCast live at the Bootleg in LA.
That's true.
Nobody else thought this was funny. It's my favorite Instagram. It's gone now forever. You'll never be able to see it.
We were the opening act. Unfortunately, it was before doors opened.
We were the very opening act.
So that's on the Instagram.
It's actually not. That's gone. Well, the beer's on the Instagram.
Yeah, no, this is on the Instagram. And that's why, look, if you missed out, it's gone. It's gone. You're never gonna see that.
I'm kind of sad we didn't post that as a normal video, though.
You know what we were going to do is, well, I mean, we still could do that. There's nothing preventing us from doing that.
You can go back and get the video?
Oh, because you filmed it. You didn't film it on your phone and then upload it. You filmed it in Instagram?
I might have filmed it on my phone and then uploaded it.
Okay.
All right, we'll see. If that becomes a normal post, you know what we're talking about. But!
A toast this week. Actually, are we pouring one out?
I think we're pouring one out.
For an old friend that is no longer. Someone who's been part of our lives for really our entire adult lives.
You know, I think it was Nick Hornby who talked about in the book Fever Pitch that his relationship with the Arsenal Gunners was the longest chosen relationship of his entire life outside of familial relations.
Which aren't chosen. That's why you don't need to say outside of those.
Now that the Sonics are gone, now that the kingdom was taken away from us, up until last week, our longest chosen relationship, even Rainier went away for a while. There's a time where you couldn't get Rainier in Seattle, right?
No.
Are you sure?
Someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall that.
Just go with it. our longest chosen relationship up until that point was a road. A road where if you were heading northbound at the right time, you could see West Seattle, you could see mountains, you could see ferries, you could see a great wheel, you could see the Space Needle. Seattle looked majestic from it.
I'm surprised that you described northbound as the better view and not southbound, where you got Mount Rainier off to one side and Puget Sound to the
southbound,
other side.
Southbound, you're underneath, though. You like being on top.
That is accurate. But still, I think there was an extended period of time where there was a great view there.
And that's why we have to pour one out to our old friend.
The viaduct.
The viaduct.
Man.
Well, cheers to the viaduct.
First,
too.
I don't know if I would say that this was a chosen relationship either. There were two highways in Seattle. We lived on the west side of I-5. It just was logical for us to go on the viaduct.
We chose which one to go on. Honestly, we're going to talk about the viaduct for a second. 45 minutes or so?
Yep.
Okay. Once Cube 93 left us, no. The viaduct was almost, for a period of time while we were growing up, the original sneak.
I don't know if I'd go that far as to call it a sneak, but it yes.
It was the road when we would go to Sonics games, right? Almost any event. When you're heading south from events, it was so much easier to get out. It still is.
No, it's not anymore, actually. Well, not currently. That's all closed down.
If you're talking from like Safeco Field, CenturyLink, right?
Yes, but
what is now T-Mobile Field and something else?
T-Mobile Park. Oh, Husky Stadium, like football games, it was the easier way to get out from, too. But not current. Not for the next 3 weeks for Husky basketball, which is a bit of a concern for me.
But we would leave from Sonics games when we were kids in the early 2000s, late 90s. And you're home in 8 minutes or something from Key Arena.
That math does not check
out. It
was
so fast to get home, though.
It was like 15.
And you could get, like, to your car, there's no traffic, get on the viaduct, gorgeous scene on the way home, can see the waterfront completely, Mount Rainier if it's a Sunday day game. It was an amazing trip, right? And then at some point, something happened. It was maybe when they started this project and they squished the lanes down and it became so full of traffic.
Yes, because they only used the one on-ramp, basically, and constricted that down to two lanes instead of three. Yeah, and the viaduct became just as bad as I-5 going through town at that point during the week. Still probably better, preferable on the weekends.
Maybe more brutal than I-5. We didn't own I-5, though. You know what I mean? I-5 is a road. People in California have the 5. People everywhere have I-5.
The we only we had ours. The road that could have collapsed at any point during an earthquake, and we knew that since 1990, and took us 29 years to do something about it.
We still don't care. We're still sad to see it go.
It's a bittersweet thing. I mean, obviously the viaduct was, well, it was your best chance of getting an amazing view as a private citizen. It also was a terrible eyesore that divided downtown from the waterfront. So that's not the worst thing in the world that it's going to be gone. But yet I'm still going to miss it.
Who is the mayor that we blame the most for this? Who is the mayor that Jan is most angry at?
I mean,
we've had so many mayors. Is it McGinn? Is McGinn the one we're angry at?
No, I think McGinn was notably anti-tunnel. I think he wanted the surface street option. So I guess Nichols, if you're going to blame anyone.
Okay. Because I know that the argument around that time was that basically our view was being sold out to rich people, right? If you were to hear Jan tell it.
Yeah, I don't know that that's really a strong argument. The view will no longer be scenic.
She chose death over losing the view.
Anything else on the viaduct?
I'm telling you, those Sonics games, going to and leaving Sonics games, having the viaduct there and being able to get to Key Arena from the West Seattle Boulevard Park White Center area so quickly, it was an amazing experience.
It was. I agree.
I think there are people who live in different parts of the town who don't really understand how amazing the viaduct was for a period of time.
Agreed. If you lived east of I-5, you were never going to go all the way west to go over to the viaduct.
Now that there's a tunnel, am I going to complain when there are Mariners games? Aside from my normal complaining that the Mariners exist?
Yeah, I think you probably still are.
Okay, good. Good.
People will still probably take that checks out. Game, the tunnel to Mariners games. Actually, people won't take the tunnel to Mariners games because no one is going to be attending Mariners games next year.
Sad to see you go, Viaduct.
You mentioned pivoting to food. Should we talk about the food that we ate on our trip to LA, and in my case, two trips to LA in the last 2 weeks here?
Absolutely, we should.
We saved this talk last week because of the, or 2 weeks ago, I think, even when we recorded, because of the fact that we knew that we were both going, and so we can talk about it together. So I think there's four categories here. Let's start with tacos.
Okay.
What tacos did you have any tacos on this trip?
I had one taco.
That's right, on your way in. You went to a new spot, right?
Right when I landed in LA on Friday, I went directly to Gorilla Tacos, which was a spot that I hadn't been to before, kind of in East LA.
And you went with the famous cousin Katie and her husband, Ben?
Yes. And it was good. I mean, you're probably not going to find bad tacos in East LA, but it's definitely not like a classic taco place. This is LA tacos, right? These are not like LA street tacos. Like, these are bougie tacos.
Uh-huh.
This is
More similar to Guisados?
Bougier than Guisados.
Really?
Yes. You consider Guisados bougie?
For a taco place.
Okay. It's a cocktail bar.
Okay.
Slash tacos.
What kind of tacos did you have?
To put this into perspective, I had three kinds of tacos. I had kind of a pork taco, and then a beef taco, like a flank steak taco, and then a fish taco. The fish taco was actually really interesting because it was a huge piece of fish. I was imagining kind of small things. It's almost like British style fish and chips, where mm-hmm. you get the one giant piece of fish.
Yes.
It was almost like that, but in taco form.
Interesting.
So it was like deep fried like that, and a big piece of fish. That was actually pretty good. I feel like that was maybe the best thing that I have. The tortillas are like pitch black tortillas.
Ah, interesting.
Sort of like street style tortillas. Ben had like a seared ahi. It was almost like poke on a taco.
Oh, really?
Thing that looked pretty good. It just, they were good, but it was nothing that was notable. The place that you went to the next day, to me, are still some of the better tacos that I've had in LA.
Well, first I went to Guisados, which both of us have been to. I hadn't been to in a year and a half. It was the summer of 2017 that I went there the previous time with Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN. Taking Royce Young and I there for lunch. And I actually went twice this time because of the fact that it was very conveniently located to where some of my friends in town for the back-to-back podcast were staying. So met Eden from the pod a couple times for lunch along with larger groups.
Wow, name dropping again.
Yes. And we did the sampler the first time.
Sampler? There's a Guisado sampler?
Yeah. You get six small tacos. Huh. So you can try a little bit of everything. And that's really great. And I don't know how well I remembered it from the previous trip, but definitely the mole, the chicken mole, I think is my favorite there. So the next time I went back, I ordered full tacos. I did the mole again, and then because of the fact that they weren't part of the sampler, did the shrimp taco and the fish taco. And I would say of those two, the fish taco, the clear winner, because the shrimp taco, you get like three pieces of shrimp. It's like basically peppers with shrimp.
The Guisados that I've been to is much less bougie than the DTLA one. Is which one did you go to?
DTLA.
Okay, that one is like pretty fancy. The one that I went to is like fine, but it's not.
Maybe I mean you went to the one in Echo Park.
Yeah, Echo Park or Los Feliz.
That was the first time I went there.
Yeah,
I mean maybe that's why I'm thinking of it as being more bougier, which is great English, based on this visit. So it remained excellent, but the other place I went to was very exciting.
Really? Oh, yeah. I know what this is.
Yes, we've talked about it previously. I went to Home State. That's what you referenced earlier.
Oh, that's not what you're talking about.
That was not what I was talking about.
Oh.
There I went with Ben and Katie on Saturday morning before going to the Clippers game, which I like barely made tip off because of the prioritization of getting these breakfast tacos and had to eat them in such a hurry. But
wow. What if you would have missed tip off in the Clippers Pistons game on Saturday morning?
I wanted to hear Blake Griffin get cheered.
Did he get cheered?
Of course. People love Blake Griffin. He didn't ask to get traded. He didn't ask for this. Then he scored 44 points. It was a good time. So I ordered the bacon, the chorizo, and the pulled pork breakfast tacos at Home State.
What did you think about them?
I thought they were good. I didn't think they were great.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see what you're saying about like the fluffy tortilla. That's a nice
call. Man, I want a tortilla that's just like, that's like, it's almost wet, right? I want a gooey tortilla.
I felt like it was a lot of eggs in there.
Oh, man. Freaking love eggs.
I mean, eggs aren't bad, but they're not what I want to define my taco.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'd definitely go back. It is a long ways away from downtown. Like, if you're just there by yourself.
Okay.
It's a bit of a haul to get to, but...
So, what was the place that you went to that's also notable?
Marisco's Jalisco. is featured on Ugly Delicious. It's the first place, taco place, I believe, that Jonathan Gold takes David Chang and their group on their taco tour in Los Angeles. And they're noted for their shrimp tacos, which they take the tortilla and the shrimp and fry the whole thing so that you've got a crispy, hard shell on the outside.
Yeah, that thing
looks amazing. Yeah, it's very different than what you're used to for street tacos. But it was outstanding. So I had 3 shrimp tacos at that place, and it was definitely someplace I would go again.
Where do you think that would rank if it were in Seattle?
Did we do this exercise previously with maybe with Homestay?
I think we did it with Guisados, and I said that it would probably win, or it would be in the final.
I think it would be in. I think that Marisco's Jalisco would be in the top 4, for sure. I don't know if
Man,
I can say more granularly.
So
than that.
Curious to try this. Fried shrimp taco.
Yeah. You got to check that out at some point. It's nowhere near where you usually are in LA.
Where is that?
It's east of downtown.
That'd be great information if I knew anything about geography.
that was some classic Pullman Coast geography here.
Well, shouts to Andre Barrera, who also came up to me at the back-to-back live show, who lives in LA. And he was like, what are your favorite tacos in LA? He also told me an anecdote that... Maybe Pelton Cast listener, ESPN intern
Jackson Siffon. I don't know if he's listening to the Pelton Cast on a regular basis at this point.
Said that there was no good food in Seattle, which is like, are you kidding me?
This is a bad take. Now, in defense of Jackson, he didn't spend much time in Seattle the last probably 5 years.
Then don't give the take. Ignorance is not a reason. Is not an excuse.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that...
I mean, Seattle is known as one of the better food cities in the country.
It's a really aggressive take at worst, right?
Yeah. It's an aggressive take to say there's no good food.
At best, the take is ignorant. At worst, the take is... I'm not going to say what I think it is.
Oh.
Prejudice against different types of food, which could be prominent in Seattle.
Okay.
But there are people at various times who have offered food takes, say in Seahawks Twitter, who... are allergic to certain items and might not have been able to eat them, but then say that they're bad. And it's like, they're not bad because you can't eat them.
Yes. They're just bad to you.
Yes. Anyway.
What are
your favorite tacos in LA? And I was like, oh, like Homestay or Guisados or whatever. And he's like, no, real street tacos or whatever. I was like, I don't live here. Like, tell me your favorite tacos in LA.
Yes. I've been to now, including Marisco's Jalisco, which does have a place indoor to sit down next to the truck. At least 2 taco trucks in LA.
I feel like I've been to more taco trucks in Portland. I'm just like always going to a destination in LA.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to do. Like, if you are living in the city, you go to the place and get the tacos, and then you go home and eat them. That's, you don't really do that if you're in a hotel or wherever.
I think it's different though. I've been to a lot of just like random restaurants in LA.
Yes.
Which maybe weren't that great. Okay, so that's tacos.
But you know what was that great? And is that great? And
okay, this is number 2.
Number 2 on the list, Major Domo, is a category all its own. So I went twice in the last 2 weeks.
You might die.
No, I'm still living. I am still here.
It is some heavy food to go twice in 2 weeks.
It is a lot. I went to on New Year's Eve when they had a prefix menu, and then went again with you guys, plus our cousin Michael and his girlfriend Carla, who live down in the LA area. So it was good to see them on Friday night. And this was your first time, the famous cousin Katie, her husband, their first time at Major Domo. What did you think?
Major Domo is good.
Wow, what a bold take.
I don't know.
But did it live up to the hype? Because the hype is pretty significant.
I mean, everything was pretty much excellent. It's weird. When we went, I went to Momofuku for the first time over the summer. And it was like, we got such an extravagant meal. I was almost sick after, right?
This one was a much, like, the right amount of food, I felt.
We definitely, we did it right this time. I don't know. The more that you have something, the less exciting it is.
Of course.
Except for Tacos Chuki's.
Which is weird because I still feel like this was my best major domo meal of
really?
The three.
Well, I mean, you've definitely learned how to order there now.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but because again, the one was a prefix menu, so it's not exactly comparable. But the first time I felt like we got too much food and it was a little bit disappointing. It wasn't in any way bad, but it took like 5% off the experience.
So, okay, you used to argue that you never get sick of songs, which you've now retracted.
I don't know if I go that far, but it is possible.
Cube 93 would play the same song 45 times an hour.
Until it went away.
Except there are a lot more commercials. 45 times in a 2-hour period.
Yes.
And you were like, why would I ever not want to hear this song? If I like the song, I want to hear it over and over and over again. It was a ridiculous take.
Look, I still want to hear The Train. They never
because
overplayed
it's been
that
20
for me.
Years. If you could go back to 1996 and still hear The Train.
Yeah, I would still want to do it. This is not the same argument at all. This is just like, if there's a physical problem after, like, if it's ailing me physically after the dinner, it's not that is good.
I'm going to make the same argument when we get to the burger section.
Okay.
But just the uniqueness of something really makes it taste better, right? Something that you can have, you know, I want things almost compartmentalized, right? Like, I don't want something that's great all the time. I want something, it's like if there was a football game, like I love football, right? But the fact that you have this small amount of football throughout the year, you only get to see your team play 16, maybe like 17, 18, 19 times. That's
the you're the same person
thing about football.
Who was, I can't, we had some sort of argument about this, didn't we? About
when I was on the other side?
The Christmas season maybe being too long.
Oh, and I want all Christmas season.
Yeah, gotta contract it.
The same thing goes with Majordomo.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, even though this is my first time there, the fact that I went to Momofuku over the summer.
With David Chang restaurants.
Yes. Because, I mean, honestly, like, it's a very similar menu. Can we run through what we got, though, really quick?
All right. So, we had a couple of we had the Bing bread.
Which is like a thick, fluffy, exactly what I'm describing about, like, a gooey type of bread, almost naan-like.
Yeah, or somewhere between a pita and a naan, I guess. Yeah. And we had that with the butter and honey, and then with prosciutto. And that was very good. We had, I can't remember if we had any other appetite. I think that was it. Then we had the macaroni and chickpea. Yeah.
Well, the truffle macaroni and chickpea.
Yes.
And there was a shitload of truffle on it.
Maybe too much truffle, quite frankly.
That was pretty, I mean, it was $46 for like one plate of macaroni and chickpea that I probably could have eaten all myself. But, like, it was excellent.
Which would have been a good dinner just on its own. Then we got the crispy duck. I'm sorry, the crispy pork belly. I don't think we did get the crispy.
I was like, you might have been ordering something else. might have actually been at a different table.
Yeah, the crispy pork belly.
Which pork belly is pretty much always good. I don't know if it stands out. If we went back the next time, I don't know if I'd do that again.
I mean, I don't know if it's necessary to have another meat, but I thought it was really quite good.
Pork belly's excellent,
and the crispiness was outstanding. It was like very crunchy. And then, of course, we had their specialty, which I had the previous time that I went with the full menu, the APL short rib that's served to you first sliced off the rib. Then they just give you the ribs to chew on, which may be my favorite part.
Really?
And then, oh, yeah.
Man, I love that sliced off. It's just like, it's like sticky. That's how long it's been marinated, right? And it's marinated in just basic things. Like, if you wanted to do this yourself, you could. Right? It's marinated in, like...
You probably could not do this.
Well, yeah, you mean you probably couldn't do it, but you could come to a sort of similar concoction. But it's marinated in, like, apple juice and orange juice and shit like that.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they said what it was marinated in.
I forgot that portion of it.
You blacked out at that point.
I may have had more sake than you did.
So you get the ribs, you get it shaved off, which is just like... I mean, I literally could have eaten 10 slices of that shaved off.
beef. And then they bring it out as a fried rice.
Oh, man. And it's probably the best rice I've ever eaten.
To me, that's where I ran out of steam. I had some fried rice. I didn't have any, I don't think, the last time. But I had some, but it was a little... That's where I got to be a little bit too much. Just a little bit.
And then also, we had the BS fries named for Bill Simmons.
Oh, that's right. We ordered them as a side. Because I had previously had them. They can't come with, I think, the ribeye, right?
Those actually are. I wanted to hate on the fries. And I was like...
No, they're really good fries.
I don't think I've met a fry I don't like, except for somehow the thing that we're going to talk about next.
Oh.
I don't think In-N-Out just like... I don't understand how In-N-Out can do things. Are we ready to transition to burgers?
No, because I still want to talk about the rest of my... I mean, so I don't think that the steak was quite as good as the short rib, and you don't get the variety of different ways that it's served, but it was still awfully good, man.
The steak?
You really can't go wrong, I don't
think. You had the steak and the short rib on New Year's Eve?
On New Year's Eve, the short rib was not one of the two options for your entree, but they just brought around a plate and shaved everyone off one slice, which is such a nice addition to everything else we had going.
I think I prefer steak to short rib, though.
All right, well, maybe next time you'll have to order that if you go back. I want to try the boiled chicken, which is also prepared multiple ways, including, boiled I believe, chicken. in a soup.
Hmm. I'd eat that.
Yeah. Of course. Okay, now we can transition to talking about hamburgers.
So this fight happens, right? It's almost like if I would have just gone to Dick's before I left Seattle, I could have hit every single place. And Lil Woody's in the airport. If they'd ever open. I went to, in the same day, both Shake Shack and In-N-Out.
I didn't realize you did both of them in the same day.
I went to In-N-Out after we left the show.
Oh, right.
Not that impressed with either.
Wow, this is your take now? This is the hill on which you're gonna die?
I don't know. Maybe there's just something about that day. If you were to chart my interest level in In-N-Out, I would say that it has waned so significantly. Maybe it's because I've been spending so much time in LA.
Yeah, lately. Are you going back to your argument that you're sick of it?
I don't know. Like,
I never get sick of In-N-Out. I eat it 3 times in the trip to Vegas and I don't get sick of it.
I'm just like, it's like not unique to me in any way. They're good burgers, but are they that much better than anything that we could find in Seattle? Probably not.
They're just different. They're on a different level.
I'm skeptical whether they're even on a different level.
Okay.
The fries are basically inedible.
I do follow the Ben Baldwin path at In-N-Out and do not ever get fries.
I did a single Shack burger, cheese fries, which the cheese fries are undefeated.
Yes.
And then I did milkshakes at both the places, which I'm not a milkshake person at all. But this was the this was the state that I was in on Saturday after being at karaoke.
You were in a milk state?
I had milkshakes at both places. I did salted caramel at Shake Shack and Neapolitan at In-N-Out.
Okay.
I used to think that Neapolitan shake was the best shake there was. And that day, the salted caramel shake was 100 times better. It was like drinking gold. And then drinking the Neapolitan shake, I'm like, it's fine. It's a shake. It's just granted, it was half the price at In-N-Out versus Shake Shack. The entire thing, it was $20 for my meal at Shake Shack, and it was $10 for my meal at In-N-Out.
Wow.
So it was basically exactly half the price, but... I didn't leave impressed with In-N-Out in any way.
Have you considered the possibility that your burger takes are bad? I mean, have you considered this?
We're going to talk about this in a second. I think the real issue is I'm just so ready to get into this ramen bracket.
No, too early. Okay. So I did not go to either In-N-Out or Shake Shack on either of my two visits to L.A., I did go to a couple of other places, though. The same day that you were going to Shake Shack and In-N-Out, I went to Tommy's, which is everyone around the country knows In-N-Out now. Tommy's is the more secret LA. I don't know, secret is too strong, but the hidden LA
it's the
chain.
Real shit.
And their specialty is they serve chili on everything.
Yeah.
So I had.
Is that good?
It is in this case, yeah. I had gone there once previously with our aunt, who talked about how when she lived in LA that she used to love going there so much. She had seen one as we were driving around and convinced us to go there for memory's sake. But at that point, I was still full. And I can't even remember whether, I don't think I got fries at all. Maybe I just got a hamburger and it was not that memorable. This time, distinctly a better a cheeseburger with chili cheeseburger. And then instead of getting the chili cheese fries, I went with just straight up cheese fries, which is more like the American.
Remember when I said that you were going to die? You just said instead of getting the chili cheese fries, I just got cheese fries.
That was my concession to it.
I got two shakes in one day.
I walked around a lot in LA, I'll have you know. Just American cheese melted on the fries. Still good, though.
No, it can't compare to those Shake Shack cheese fries, though.
It can't, but I also had some chili left over from the burger that had fallen out, so I was able to scoop that up. It was a great meal. The other place I went was Cassell's, which is famous for their patty melt. So their original location is, I believe, in Koreatown, but then they've recently opened up a new one in downtown LA that I went to a couple weeks ago. I've never eaten a patty melt in my life, and apparently theirs is very different from a traditional patty melt. Basically, it was like a grilled cheese sandwich on rye, tons of cheese on both sides. I'm going to die. Yeah, I got it. With a hamburger patty in the middle. That was really quite good.
The Pelton brothers know so little about patty melts.
Patty melts are not
I thought there might have been tuna on it.
I believe that's a tuna melt, technically speaking.
I don't think I've ever eaten a patty melt in my entire life.
Well, at some point, you're going to have to try it at Cassell's in LA. That's what, David Cheng's favorite patty melt anywhere? Which is a weird standard to have. But
favorite
okay.
patty melt?
All right, anything else as far as LA food that we need to discuss?
I mean, we talked about every single bit of LA food that I ate.
I went to a couple of other places, I guess, but I don't think...
You were there for a lot more days than me.
Anything that is like so notable that it needs to be discussed here. Okay, then we can go ahead and get to what you've been waiting for.
I really think that just my palate... Like, we would talk about tacos, and I was like, I don't really feel like tacos. We'd talk about burgers, I'd be like, I guess I can eat a burger.
This is a bad take. This is an aggressively bad take.
It's not.
No.
First of all, you're wrong.
I mean, I'm not saying what we're talking about is bad. Second I'm just all, saying I have all foods matter.
My body is ready.
This is a weird way to put it.
My body is ready for ramen.
Hashtag ramen season.
I'm not even joking. Like, if you would have been like, oh, we can go get some ramen, I would have been like...
We could have gone and gotten ramen. You know they have ramen in LA.
Nobody offered. I needed somebody else to bring up the idea.
You went to Shake Shack by yourself. No one forced you to go to Shake Shack.
I needed Shake Shack in that moment.
Okay. It is time. We've been talking about it for weeks here. And now that the Seahawks season is over, it is time to unveil our bracket in our search for Seattle's best ramen. A search that I have come to realize after thinking about it more is destined to disappoint everyone.
Really? Why?
Because even more so than hamburgers, like obviously there are a lot of strong takes and different opinions about hamburgers, but they're all about the same types of the same hamburger places, the same five hamburger places. There's a reason we have the debate. It's In-N-Out versus Shake Shack or versus Dick's, and it's not like Carl's Jr. Like everyone agrees.
The idea of Carl's Jr. being in the conversation.
Everyone agrees that those are the three notable burger chains. Everyone agrees that like Loretta's and Lil Woody's are right up there among Seattle burgers. But ramen, it's like everyone has their own favorite spot in their neighborhood, and that's their favorite ramen.
I mean, really, what you're saying to me, though, is...
All ramen is great?
That's why we're needed more than ever.
Perhaps. Because let me tell you something. I've looked on Yelp for reviews of ramen places. They are all rated 4 stars. It does not
every
distinguish
ramen
between
is,
them.
Every ramen is precisely very good.
There were 2 4.5 stars, and there are some, alas, that are less than 4 stars, none of which made our cut because of the fact that they were fewer than less than 4 stars.
Okay, so tell us about this ramen bracket.
So this was
I've ceded way too much control to you about this.
This was agonizing cutting this down. And again, like
it's one of the hardest things you've ever had to do.
Some people, including loyal listener Tyler, his favorite ramen place didn't make the cut.
Wow.
He's like, you had to draw the line somewhere.
I think I might have heard him referred to as Ramen Boy at some point.
That is accurate.
I don't know if that's accurate. But his favorite ramen was cut out. What was it?
Yorishiko ramen in Wallingford, I believe.
Okay, what happened to it?
It just didn't rate high enough.
Wow.
The other one that did not make the cut, notably, is Hokkaido Ramen Santuka, which is a Japanese chain that also has locations in the Seattle area.
And in general, I feel like, and granted, this isn't In-N-Out versus Shake Shack, right? There are not that many of these locations. It's a Japanese chain. Still, I think I would prefer to find a local Seattle restaurant.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, I feel like a Fury Ramen in Portland is probably my favorite ramen of all, and that's also a Japanese chain that first came to the U.S. in Portland.
Let's just be cool here. How many of these top eight ramens have you had?
Only one of these top eight, which is why it's a funny...
giving takes about your Portland ramen when you haven't even had seven out of the top eight Seattle ramens? Let's just cool it on this Portland talk here.
All right, we'll see. Okay, so here's the
scene. You're going to pour one out for Ozzie Alonso later. You're going to pour one out for a Timbers player.
Name a Timbers player. If I could, I would. The number one seed, okay, suggested to us by Jake One, who we got to catch up with in LA. Good times there.
Just name dropping.
Ramen. What?
It's a running joke. Deal with it.
Ramen Danbo in Capitol Hill.
Danbo's the number one seed.
That is the number one seed. That was one of the two places that had a 4.5 star rating on Yelp. The number two seed, one that I think was mentioned to us more than any other in terms of the suggestions for this. I don't know if that's actually how it's pronounced, but Oink, also in Capitol Hill. The number three seed, the other one to get a 4.5 star rating on Yelp, all the way in Federal Way, Tokyo Ya Ramen. All right, the number four seed. Perhaps the most intriguing entry on this bracket because they only serve ramen on Fridays at lunch.
Hell yes.
And only serve 60 bowls, apparently. So we are going to have to get there early to assure ourselves getting a bowl so we can actually review it. Tsukushinbo in the International District.
All right.
The number five seed is Aloha Ramen in Lake City. Considered
Lake City.
A classic ramen.
And we're truly talking Seattle area. We're going Lake City all the way down to Federal
Way. I mean, Lake City is in the city of Seattle. It's also not as far north as we went for dumplings.
We will travel to any place.
But let me tell you, the viaduct sure was not closed then. All right, our number six seed, the one of these that I have had. I don't think you've had any of these.
I had Arashi.
Other than this. Oh, you've had Oink?
Yes.
Okay. Arashi Ramen, which we are most familiar with the South Center location, but also one in Ballard and I believe Edmonds. The number seven seed going back to Capitol Hill, Suika. I don't know entirely how that's pronounced. And then the number eight seed, Betsu Tenjin, also in Capitol Hill. So there you go. That's it. Those are your eight ramen locations.
Wow.
That's the bracket. One of these is going to be crowned Seattle's best ramen, following in the footsteps of, I mean, really, it was Loretta's was crowned Seattle's best burger, even though it wasn't officially crowned Seattle's Loretta's best burger. Retroactively, like scholars are just going to say that it was. Dozone being crowned Seattle's best dumplings, and Tacos Chuki's is Seattle's best tacos/burritos.
Oh, I'm fired up. I mean, we're leaving some notable ramen places out of here.
Yes.
I mean, I think one of the ramen places that maybe most people are familiar with is the Izakaya Ramen, right?
That's the name of the style of restaurant.
Oh, the Kazuki Ramen. They changed their name.
Did they?
Yeah, there was two. It used to be right on Pine Street.
But they didn't change it from Izakaya.
I think they did.
I don't think so.
So the Kazuki Ramen, right, where there's one on Pine Street, and then there's another one at the South Center Mall, right?
There's a variety of locations. Some of them rated higher than others, but in general not rated that highly. And it seems to me more like, it's like the entry ramen.
And I freaking love their ramen. So we're really going to have to learn quite a bit about ramen here, right? We've both eaten it enough times, but it's going to be a thing where by the end of this, we really need to have, in the same way that it was with dumplings, really a sense of exactly what we're looking for in ramen.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things you're going to evaluate. The quality of the broth is obviously crucial. The noodles, and then the chashu pork belly. Or in some cases, there may be an alternative, I guess, to that potentially. One question that came up is, you know, are we going to order the same type of ramen at every restaurant for comparison's sake? And my response to that has been no, much like we didn't always order the exact same burger at every restaurant. Sometimes you got one with bacon. Sometimes you got, you know.
Much like Dozone won the dumpling bracket, not because of their dumplings.
Yes, exactly. I don't know if we've ruled out, I think, the cousins to the ramen. There's not going to be any Simon in this bracket, with apologies to our friends at Ma'ono.
And Paul.
That's a me joke. That's the most damning thing I can say about that.
Better. There's
not going to be cousins to it in this bracket.
Except
so we're
for
just going to
the famous cousin Katie.
That is true. She will be a part of this. If we have several people in mind, but if you are interested in being part of...
There's notes about who would be the third Pelton Brothers on the ramen bracket. Can you make a ramen bracket logo and post it on Instagram?
A logo?
You know, like you make it in fancy, like Elite Eight style, right?
With you mean
like
a bracket?
A Pelton Cast ramen bracket on there.
Sure.
If you feel like we did do this for the dumpling bracket, there was a last minute change. I don't know if you remember this.
That was the case, yes.
And if there's, for some reason, there's somebody out there who feels like from this ramen, there's something that we missed. There's a hidden gem. There's a diamond in the rough ramen place.
I don't think you should contact us.
Absolutely contact us.
No.
Are you kidding me?
Don't add us. You should contact us if you
want
to be a third Pelton Brother.
About every single ramen there is.
No, we don't.
You're either competing or you're not.
I've already reviewed all you're the ramens.
You don't think that there's any ramen that you've overlooked?
Top ramen.
You don't think that there's like a top ramen that you might have missed? It's funny that we consider like ramen like new, even though it's something that we all grew up on.
But it wasn't actual ramen. It was stuff that we were putting ice cubes in so that we could eat it immediately.
Be cool.
And breaking it up so that the noodles would be easier to eat, as opposed to being the full thick noodles that they're supposed to be in ramen.
Do you think you should cook top ramen just with the whole noodles?
I think that's the idea, yeah.
You're not actually supposed to break it up? Does not everybody break it up?
I think white people did.
Oh my god. I think wow, next time I make top ramen, I'm cooking the full noodles.
You gotta use it and then you gotta do
white people too.
Gaijin do that. You gotta use chopsticks to eat them.
Wow.
I mean, and then, you know, maybe consider cooking an egg, hard boiling an egg and throwing that in there. You can make top ramen you can elevate it.
All right.
That is not going to be the winner of our search for
Season's
Best Ramen.
I am so excited about this ramen bracket, though.
The people are waiting for this.
Oh, my God. And I've got a message for the Seattle Times. Who, we do a search for Seattle's best burger, right? And then the Seattle Times does a search for Seattle's best burger. Did they do a dumpling bracket?
No.
They probably did. They do a search for Seattle's best tacos. We do a search for
they
Seattle's...
They did not do a search for Seattle's best
tacos. They did.
Did they?
I don't know. But
no.
They did. We announce a ramen bracket. And then the Seattle Times, all of a sudden, is doing a search for Seattle's best ramen. I've got two words for them.
They're not doing a search for Seattle's
best. Cease and desist.
No.
You'll be hearing from our lawyer, the famous cousin Katie, Seattle Times.
You will not be hearing from Katie. All right, this has already been like 45 minutes, so let's get to sports.
Whew.
We start with an update from the NHL to Seattle Group, which announced that they are hiring outgoing Seattle City Council member Rob Johnson as their transportation advisor at the end of his term at the end of 2019. Isn't that convenient?
Mm-hmm.
Johnson,
I didn't know about this info.
Johnson had previously announced that he would not run for re-election. He's one of three council members so far to say so, including Council President Bruce Harrell, who announced that last week after our podcast. Johnson said that the conversations began after the announcement he would not run again, and over the next year he will recuse himself from any arena-related discussions or votes. so there's no conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that Bruce Harrell will find himself a nice job with the Arena Group also.
I don't think Bruce Harrell is going to work for the Arena Group.
Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah, the conversations. They just really liked working with him during the Arena conversations. It totally makes sense.
By the time we next record this podcast, assuming for some reason we do not decide to record it on Monday next week, well, may or may not be. We'll see how bad the traffic gets during this viaduct shutdown.
It has actually not been bad at all.
So far.
You people are.
My bold prediction was that the first week was going to be like better than everyone expected, but then it was going to get worse in subsequent weeks.
Nobody cares. The media is gone by the second week. There's no Twitter story about Seattle's like...
Oh, because the Seattle Times is going to be so busy reporting on ramen.
They really are front page ramen stories.
By the time we next record this podcast...
They're going to be reporting on the hot takes that you deliver next.
There's no hot takes. It's just an update.
They're the Eagles.
We've already done the hot takes. We've already done the takes on this.
Okay.
We will know whether Edgar Martinez will be a Hall of Famer.
Wow.
The final year of his eligibility.
We will know that Edgar Martinez will be a Hall of Famer.
Almost certainly. The announcement is scheduled for January 22nd, and things are looking good for Edgar. He is currently at 90.4% of the 43% of known ballots, according to the Baseball Hall of Fame tracker. More importantly, he's added 17 votes so far after falling 20 votes shy last year. And projections by Jason Sardell on Twitter show Edgar making it 100% of the time with a median vote of 86%, far better than the 75% he needs.
This is not even like, so 80% means 100%. This is 100% means 100%.
It is. I mean, I'm still nervous. Nothing is ever 100% until it's 100%.
Let's just regress your nervousness to the mean, because this is still a baseball-related story.
Oh, like I shouldn't... like it's
You're not actually nervous.
Yeah, you know. Be good for Edgar.
Who leads the vote?
Mariano Rivera has received votes on every public ballot thus far.
Wow. A closer? God, what's next? A DH in the Hall of Fame?
Exactly. I mean, it feels like the fact that Harold Baines got in is like actually great news for...
Harold Baines didn't get in.
He got in. He's in the Hall of Fame.
He wasn't voted in. Everybody knows that there's a difference. Harold Baines,
but if Harold Baines
in his heart knows that he didn't make it in the proper way, and Edgar Martinez is going to, he should arrange players in the Hall of Fame with the percentage of vote that they got, or whether they were just like added on people at the end.
I mean, it's almost like they should have a pyramid, and then you do different levels of players in the Hall of Fame. What a brilliant idea. Rivera with 100% of the known ballots so far. Another closer. I don't know where I got that thought in my head. Roy Halladay is next with 94%, and then Mike Mussina currently with 82%. He's kind of on the borderline whether he'll make it in this.
And Edgar's right in between there. Yes. After Roy Halladay, ahead of Mike Mussina.
Well, I guess that we're up to now 44% of known ballots is of this evening. There was some updates this afternoon, and Edgar now at 90.6%.
Wow. So,
typically, you do get more votes in the public ballots than you do on the private ones because
there's nervous Edgar voters.
The
people who don't want to say publicly that they voted for Edgar.
No, that they didn't vote
for
Edgar.
They didn't vote for Edgar.
Like the people who are like small Hall of Fame, like keep all of them out. Like they don't want to make that public. They don't want that in their mentions. Just like we don't want ramen places in our mentions.
Do mention them to us. Mention them to me at Tristan Carcino. Yeah. You know, Kevin always likes when you at him directly instead of the Pelton cast. It's at K Pelton.
No, just do both.
Personal messages to his personal Instagram.
Put his
is where you should do it. Oh, not the podcast Instagram. His personal Instagram. That's where you can really deliver your ramen takes.
People are not going to realize this is a joke. You mentioned this earlier.
The joke is that nobody's listening.
And sadly, I'm out of beer. You've got your second beer. It's time to pour one out for another old friend, Osvaldo Alonso. The last remaining original Sounders player. I announced last Thursday that he was signing with Minnesota United as an unrestricted free agent after the Sounders made it pretty clear they had very tepid interest in bringing him back for the 2019 season. Alonso spent a full decade with the Sounders, not counting, I believe he played, or I guess he wasn't with the Sounders USL team at all, but still a key fixture in a team that has made the playoffs all 10 of those years, won MLS Cup, multiple U.S. Open Cups. Here was head coach Brian Schmetzer's quote about this. "We have seen many great players that have played for our club, but none have had as much influence as Osvaldo Alonso. His drive and determination to win was evident from the first day of training. His first game and continued throughout all the successful years he had.
Was Schmitz there in his first day of training?
Yeah, he was an assistant.
He was an assistant? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he was the head coach of the USL Sounders, and then they made him an assistant to Z with Sounders FC. I feel fortunate to have been able to coach such a tremendous player. We watched his game evolve, his influence grow to where he eventually led us as captain to our first MLS Cup. I want to personally thank him for his play for the last 10 years. We will miss El Corazon. And then Osvaldo Alonso's comments on Twitter after he signed. Dear fans, first of all, I want to thank you for the unconditional support I've received these past 10 years. There have been ups and downs, but throughout you have given me amazing support, and I will never forget that. Despite having arrived without knowing the language or the city, you welcomed me with open arms, and I felt at home from the first day. In Seattle, I grew as a player, a person, and experienced professional and personal moments that I will never forget. I leave with a heart filled with the fulfillment and love that you gave to my family and me during all this time. You will always be in my heart. Thank you, Seattle Sounders, for giving me the opportunity to be part of this organization for 10 years. It's been a privilege to represent this club for so long and be the captain who lifted the first MLS Cup for this franchise. Thank you, Seattle, for everything.
All right. They kind of covered it there.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. That's a bummer. I mean, I still think Osvaldo Alonso is a good player. Like,
yeah,
I get what the Sounders are doing with moving Roldan back to defensive midfield, but they're definitely going to need some attacking players to step up in terms of providing depth. But probably not in the mix this year, but potentially down the road. That may include the players the Sounders drafted in last week's MLS Super Draft, or I guess it started last week and concluded earlier this week.
Mm-hmm. It's a six-week-long process.
It's longer than the NFL draft. In the first round, they drafted Air Force winger Tucker Bone, who was born in Tacoma. And
there was a person in Tacoma named Tucker Bone.
I don't know how long he spent in Tacoma. I believe he was an Army brat and moved around a bit before going to the Air Force Academy to play his college soccer. In the second round, they took Swedish midfielder Joel Rydstrand, who played his college soccer at Creighton. And in the third round, San Diego State defender Alex Burkholz, who had played for the Sounders U23 team previously. Now, actually, the more notable addition the Sounders made was outside of the Super Draft, which is diminished in importance as homegrown players have become a bigger part of MLS, as we've seen with the Sounders, with obviously most notably Jordan Morris. I know I can't think of the UW player that they signed as a homegrown player who Harry Wingo. They also signed Indiana goalkeeper Trey Muse as a homegrown player. Muse played 2 years at IU, winning the College Cup both times, and was an All-American pick last season as a sophomore. He was recruited from Louisville to play for Sounders Academy, making him eligible to be a homegrown player, and is considered perhaps the best amateur goalkeeper in the country.
Really?
He's spent last week training with the U20 men's national team.
Wow.
So this is kind of a big deal. Like, it's going to be a while until probably this pays dividends. Stephen Fry doesn't need to be looking over his shoulder just yet, but he's like the long-term future of the Sounders at keeper.
Man. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Trey Muse.
Yeah. He sounds like he should be in an indie rock band, I feel like.
Because his last name is Muse.
Yeah.
And his first name is
Trey.
Trey.
Yeah. It's very indie rocky.
Yeah. I'll agree with that.
So the Sounders, believe it or not, start training camp next week. This long MLS offseason is almost done.
Look, we're midway through January. I told you it was spring.
Yeah, it is. GM Garth Lagerwey said he does not expect any more changes before the start of training camp, although the Sounders still perhaps looking. There's been trade rumors involving left-back Waylon Francis. Now that the Sounders learned that Brad Smith will not be recalled from his loan by Bournemouth of EPL. Yeah, he will be with the team. Bournemouth? Through July. He will be with the team through July. And then the Sounders, of course, also have Nuhu at that position. And then Roman Torres, the other one who's been linked with a move somewhere else now that he has lost his starting job to Kim Keehee.
So the team, as of this moment, will look relatively similar to what we saw last year.
Yeah, I mean, Alonso is by far the most notable departure.
And it's kind of the way it is, given how short the offseason is, and that there are so many transactions that happen during the season in the MLS, you would expect them to look pretty similar.
Yeah, especially with the Sounders making their biggest moves over the summer, Raul Ruiz Diaz in particular.
Which, it'll happen again next year.
I don't know. I don't think there's going to be someone of the caliber of Rui Diaz added next year, probably.
The team is going to look very different, especially in ways that we can't even predict right now.
Probably. Last year will likely be the last year of the third designated player spot in MLS.
Getting rid of it?
Yeah.
Why?
They'd rather teams use allocation money instead of the designated player spot.
What does that even mean?
So they'll give teams more allocation money to pay down salaries instead of, you know, the largely uncapped designated player spot. It's slightly even to the playing field.
Great.
I mean, it's probably unbalanced, not terrible news for the Sounders, because while they are a wealthy organization, they're not as wealthy as the Galaxy or the Red Bulls.
The Red Bulls?
Yeah.
Have they ever been good?
They've been in strong playoff teams for a long period of time. They just really haven't broken through in the MLS Cup.
Made the playoffs 10 years in a row.
I'm not looking at
the Red Bulls.
I'm just saying they spend more money on designated players than the Sounders do.
They're not good at it.
No, probably
not.
The
Mariners spent a lot of money on payroll this last year.
I mean, Bradley Wright Phillips is not walking through that door.
Okay.
Also, in the midst of their offseason, the Seattle Storm WNBA free agency is now open for business, although the contracts can't officially be signed until February 1st. The Storm will probably not be very active in free agency. They have 9 players off the 12-player roster from last year's WNBA champions under contract. Rookie center Mercedes Russell is a reserved player, which means she can negotiate only with the Storm, kind of similar to, you know, maybe a baseball player who's pre-arbitration. She'll almost certainly be in training camp. And then veteran reserves Crystal Linghorn and Noelle Quinn are unrestricted free agents. I said at the start of the offseason, I expect Langhorn's probably going to find another home after seeing her minutes and role really reduced last year, but perhaps she will be back. Quinn, I would expect, will probably be in training camp and perhaps fighting for a job there.
Okay.
We move now to Husky basketball, which we've been talking about.
Let's talk Husky basketball at the end.
All right.
Let's talk Seahawks first.
Well, do you want to talk Husky football then?
Sure.
I think had already talked about by the time we potted last that Taylor Rapp had declared for the NFL yes. draft, but Byron Murphy subsequently joined him in a move that was no surprise to anyone who had ever watched Byron Murphy.
Report. I mean, we had talked about how Byron Murphy should do this. I mean, he's kind of considered, I think, of everybody who's leaving, the most appealing to the NFL, even yeah. somehow more so than Taylor Rapp. Partially just kind of
I wouldn't say somehow
positional value between a safety versus a cornerback, but also Byron Murphy's good.
He was probably the best cornerback in the country last year. He was so rated by Pro Football Focus.
He's going to be a first round pick.
It seems very likely that he will be a first round pick.
It kind of fits the mold of the type of cornerback that NFL teams are looking for. We're sad to see him go, but also it's exciting to see another Husky playing in the secondary in the NFL.
It's a pipeline.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Saw Marcus Peters jersey last week.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow. It feels like a bad thing in the short term, but ultimately all of this happening is a good thing.
Because you're going to come as a cornerback commit to the UW believing that I can be the next Byron Murphy. I can be the next Marcus Peters. I can be the next Sidney Jones.
Kevin King.
I mean, hopefully I won't tear
my... We're talking about a lot of players who are drafted in the first and second round.
Hopefully I won't rupture my Achilles in a draft workout like Sidney Jones, but that's a long shot. One cornerback who will not be joining him in the NFL next year is Miles Bryant, the Huskies' nickel corner, who announced that he will return for his senior season.
Do we think we'll see Miles Bryant move to the outside for a senior year or stay inside?
I'll be curious to see. My hunch would be probably not. I mean, they do have a lot of talent outside. They've recruited some elite corners who haven't necessarily gotten much of a chance to play yet. And, I think are going to look to see those players. And his body is, you know, his skill set, everything, it fits the slot more than it does a boundary corner. But you never know.
Well, I'm fired up about it.
Okay. Yeah. All right, you mentioned the Seahawks. The big news in the offseason is, at this point in the offseason, is that they can begin signing players to futures contracts. They signed 9 of the 10 players on their practice squad to futures contracts, the exception being quarterback Alex Magoo, who instead signed with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
But why?
Because I don't know if you're aware of this. The Seahawks have Russell Wilson. And the Jaguars do not have an empty depth chart at quarterback.
Do you think this was a Seahawks decision or an Alex Magoo decision?
It was 100% an Alex Magoo decision.
Okay.
The Jaguars gave him a better offer.
We shouldn't blame the Seahawks for this.
I mean, I suppose if they had wanted to try harder, they could have, you know, they could have made a similar offer. They could have promoted him from the practice squad at the end of the season so he wasn't available to every team at this point. I mean, there's other things they could have
but
done.
But also, he's a practice squad quarterback. And you have your starter.
Everyone else is a lot more excited about Alex Magoo than I am.
Wow.
I'll put it that way.
Whew. I mean, the reason that you shouldn't be excited about Alex Magoo is because in a perfect world, Alex Magoo doesn't play. Maybe in a mostly perfect world. In a perfect world, Alex Magoo plays every fourth quarter. But in a mostly perfect world, Alex Magoo never plays.
Yes, but I do think it's important for the Seahawks to have a good backup quarterback just in case. I'm not convinced that Alex Magoo is going to be an NFL-caliber quarterback at any point in his career. I think people got a little out of hand based on his preseason performance in the fourth quarter of preseason.
Honestly, if I were him, I would rather be on the Jaguars.
Yeah.
Because your chances of ever playing in a game are significantly higher playing for the team that really doesn't have a starting quarterback at this point, played two different starters throughout the year.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense from his standpoint. And, you know, there's probably only so much you can do from the Seahawks standpoint to prevent that.
Did you have any takeaways from this weekend's divisional round playoff games?
My priors were confirmed. The importance of offense, the importance of passing offense in particular, the primacy of that.
Can I tell you what is more important than passing offense?
What is that?
Home field advantage.
Well, yeah.
And that to me is the most important thing about this round of the playoffs, in that people were like, running wins in the playoffs. Defense wins in the playoffs. I'm like getting it in the Rodney Harrison voice. But there's no thing that wins in the playoffs. Home field advantage is the thing that wins in the playoffs. There's no style of play, right?
I mean, I do think passing offense wins in the playoffs, but yes.
But it doesn't matter. Home field advantage, this is what we've learned.
Also, home passing offense wins during the regular season and gets you home field advantage.
Winning during the regular season is the most important thing you can do. And it was nice to see this weekend that playing at a very high level throughout the entire season still matters in the postseason.
Yes.
And that's the most important thing that a team should be looking for, not establishing a type of play that would be successful in the playoffs.
I was going to say the Seahawks should be looking to move to the AFC West, but then I remembered Mahomes exists, so that's not really helping.
You want to go to the AFC where they had the two best teams in the AFC for
yeah.
the regular
well,
season?
Well, I mean, Phillip Rivers is old, but, you know, it may not continue forever in LA.
Yeah, they do not want to. If they want to be anywhere, they want to be in the AFC East.
I mean, yeah, but I was thinking that was probably not a geographic reality. That would also be some extraordinarily long road trips.
Kansas City is now in the AFC West.
If you had to play every year at New England, Miami, and Buffalo. I don't know. I've decided that the Jets are the team that's leaving the AFC East at this point. I don't know where I came up with that one. But
anyway, that was kind of my only takeaway, was that people talk about how, you know, X thing wins in the playoffs. And the only thing that you could really count on any sort of consistent basis year to year over long periods of time is home field.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're in a period where, you know, probably the top two seeds are doing slightly too well, basically. Like, there should be it shouldn't be this chalk. It also shouldn't be as messy as it was during the early 2000s when everyone was like, it doesn't matter what seed you get. Wild cards go to the Super Bowl all the time. Like, neither of those is probably sustainable. There's a happy medium in between. But yeah, you obviously want to get a bye and home field advantage. The Seahawks have gone to the Super Bowl every time they've been the number one seed, and none of the times that they haven't been the number one seed.
Yes. Anyway, that was kind of the only thought that I had about this weekend as it relates to the Seahawks.
Okay. Let's talk briefly about UW women's basketball coming off a weekend where they split against Colorado and Utah, getting a 68-58 win at home against Colorado on Friday, their first in Pac-12 play, before losing 58-43 to Utah on Sunday to drop to 1-4 so far in conference play. This weekend, the Huskies will be traveling to the Bay Area to take on number 6 Stanford on Friday night, who come in 4-0 in conference play. And then Cal on Sunday, after a strong non-conference showing, the Bears have started a disappointing 1-3 thus far in Pac-12. All three of those losses, though, are by 5 points or fewer. This is still, I think, a pretty strong team, and it's going to be a tough weekend for the Huskies to come away from a victory with a victory, even though they have shown the ability to play competitively on the road against elite teams, losing by 11 and 10 respectively at Oregon and Oregon State 2 weeks ago in their first Pac-12 road trip. Let's wrap it up with UW men's basketball, which is 3-0 so far in Pac-12 play.
All I was of this... in the green room with Jake One watching the game.
Were you? Like, you know, on a phone?
On Jake's phone.
Nice. What were the takeaways?
It was actually a pretty dark time. Colorado was catching up. I think they got within one possession while we were watching.
I did not watch a single second of Husky basketball.
The takeaways were that Jake One loves Husky basketball.
He's a season ticket holder.
He missed the Seahawk playoff game to go to that Wazoo game.
I did not do that. I still haven't seen a second of UW men's basketball in Pac-12 play. They've played three games.
Wow, that's kind of shocking.
It is. I mean,
you haven't seen any of it?
I was in LA last week
with me and Jake Wong.
Yeah, no one told me about it. Thanks for the
invite. You were invited.
So I think the first question we should answer, having missed these games, plus also Cal State Fullerton was the New Year's Day game.
No one cares.
Did not see a second of that one either. How are the Huskies undefeated? So I have some analysis on this. First off, they have played a relatively easy schedule. KenPom rates their...
Undefeated in Pac-12 play.
Yes.
Let's be clear here.
KenPom rates their Pac-12 schedule so far ninth among the 12 teams. That has also helped 4-0 Arizona, which leads the Pac-12 and is tied for 11th in schedule strength, but hasn't done much for Arizona State, which has an identical 11th schedule strength, but is 2-2 in conference play after being one of the last, the best Pac-12 team in non-conference. Or Oregon, which has had the other team that's had an easier schedule than the Huskies and has started 1-2 so far in conference play. The Huskies are shooting a Pac-12 best 47% on three-pointers in their first three games.
Super sustainable.
Led by David Crisp's 12 of 18 shooting.
You're so ready to start hating on the Huskies again. Oh my God, I didn't even realize it.
I mean, they're not going to go 18-0 in conference play. Bold prediction.
Wow.
And opponents...
You're not even willing to predict an undefeated conference season.
I'm not.
They'll be ranked if they do. Calling it right here. They get to like 24.
Maybe. They got some votes this week.
I was wondering if they'd be ranked. No Pac-12.
I was not wondering if they would be ranked. I was wondering whether they'd get more votes.
If they were, we can talk about this after. This will be the next topic.
And opponents are shooting 32% on threes, which is the fourth lowest mark thus far.
3-point defense matters.
In Pac-12 play. That said, the defense has just overall been awesome. The Huskies are number one in Pac-12 play by a wide margin in both block and steal rate. And then defensive rebounding hasn't been quite the weakness so far that it was in non-conference play.
If they win both games this weekend, are they ranked?
No. People are not going to be that impressed by beating Stanford and Cal at home.
They would be, I mean, honestly, they would have to. When you look at it record-wise, you're 5-0 in the Pac-12, 14-4 overall.
You're 5-0 in a conference where nobody gets any credit. Like, you cannot help your reputation that much by winning Pac-12 games. Although the Huskies have upped their KenPom ranking, they're up to 46 after dropping to 55th was their low entering conference play. So that's been good to see. If they win at Oregon, if they sweep the Oregon schools in 2 weeks and are still undefeated, then they would be ranked.
They have to get to 7-0 in conference play to be ranked.
Yeah, this is a really bad conference. Do I need to go over how bad the Pac-12 is?
East Coast bias from you.
Classic.
And KenPom stats.
Yes. Which have the Husky, the Pac-12. There's, okay, so you've got the top five conferences. They have the overall ratings. There's a drop of 4.5 points between the Big East and the Pac-12. And then there's a drop, if you go 4.6 more points down from the Pac-12, you get to the MAC. So the Husky, the Pac-12.
Better than the MAC.
Pac-12 is closer to the MAC than they are to the Big East, which is the weakest of the power conferences.
I was going
to
say, is the Big East even considered a power conference anymore?
It sure is if the Pac-12 is.
Oh, God.
I mean, it is considered a power conference. The West Coast Conference also closer to Pac-12 than Big East, along with the American.
Right now, if you were to look at it, do you still think the Pac-12 is a one-bid conference?
I think if Arizona and Washington continue to separate themselves from the pack, that there's a chance that both of them could maybe get bids if the Pac-12 tournament broke, right?
Baby.
Or maybe one of them pulls away and gets an automatic, you know, gets in position where they would be an at-large bid, and whoever happens to win the Pac-12 tournament, if it's someone else, could get in.
How many games do the Huskies have to win in Pac-12 play to guarantee themselves an at-large bid?
I would say probably at least 14. They went 14-4. That would get them close.
14-4.
Dad, Pac-12 is really bad. Like, you don't seem to be getting this
ever. What were they the year that they missed it with Roten? That they won the Pac-12 regular season and missed the NCAA tournament?
They were 14-4.
We're not.
They also
are you kidding me? They were 14-4 in Pac-12 play and missed the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
They should have made it that year.
They should have made it that year.
It's bullshit. Why do we even pay attention? Why are we caring about this?
They had a lower ranking that year than in KenPom than they have right now.
What were they?
56.
Wow, stats be hating.
Objective reality sometimes be hating. The Huskies also went 14-4 in 2005, the year they earned number one seed. Fun fact. And also in 2009. And by the way, they won a lot of games under Lorenzo Romar. Who won his 400th game? A toast to Lorenzo Romar won his 400th career game last week at Pepperdine.
How's he doing at Pepperdine, by the way?
They had a really easy non-conference schedule, I believe. That's about all I know about things right now.
What was the Roten here? What was their non-conference record?
It was probably pretty similar. They were overall 24-11, so they went. I guess it was 10-7.
That means that they
I guess they were not very good in non-conference that year.
Non-conference games. This team lost.
Well, that also includes they lost to Minnesota in the NIT.
We've lost to Minnesota too. Okay,
it also includes the loss to Oregon State in the Pac-12 tournament. But yes, they were 6-5 in terrain conference play that year, and then subsequently beat Seattle U to get to 7-5 in non-conference play preseason.
So this team looks better than that team.
Yes, although that team also did lose to Duke by 6 points in a neutral site. That's a thing that happened.
We played Duke?
Yeah, it was in Madison Square Garden.
I vaguely remember that game.
Lost to Marquette by 2 and Duke by 6, and both of those were top 20 teams in the country. Rough year.
We should have gotten. Okay. What about this weekend?
So this weekend, the Huskies should extend their undefeated streak, facing Stanford and Cal.
Is this the easiest combination of teams in the Pac-12?
Yeah, I would say it probably is. Stanford is, it pretty clearly is. Stanford is ranked 10th among the Pac-12 teams on KenPom, and Cal is dead last and has the lowest rating of any power conference team. Among the reasons that the Pac-12...
Who's their coach?
Viking Jones.
It's still Viking.
It is.
Well, enjoy while you've got it, Viking.
Don't know how much longer that's going to be lasting. After an 0-3 start in conference play, Stanford got its first win on Saturday against Arizona State. The first win all season for the Cardinal against a team ranked higher than number 150 in KenPom. Although they didn't really play any middle-class teams. They basically played like bad teams or really elite teams. Four of their five non-conference losses came to teams in the KenPom top 25, including an overtime loss at Kansas.
Wow.
Sophomore forward KZ Okpala has emerged as a go-to guy in a first-round NBA prospect this year.
Really?
He's the player to watch on the wing. Dejon Davis, the Garfield High product and backcourt mate of Jalen Noel, has stagnated a bit in his second season. His three-point percentage is down from 40 to 35%, although he has managed to cut his turnover rate, which was a major weakness for Dejon as a freshman.
Dejon Davis sucks. Okay.
That's not what I said.
Got it. Okay.
Cal has started 0-4 in conference play. Will get outscored by more than 20 points per 100 possessions. They rank 11th in the Pac-12 in both offensive and defensive rating. If the Huskies lose this game, then you can kiss that out large bid goodbye. That simple. They could go 17-1 if that was the one they lost. No at large bid. I didn't get a chance to mention, by the way, they are a 10 seed in the latest bracketology from Joe Lunardi.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Are there any other Pac-12 teams?
Arizona is an 11.
There we go.
I think Arizona is being counted as the conference championship, although I'm not totally sure how that works.
10 seed's not even a play-in game.
That's true. They were one of the last four not in a play-in game. So things are looking up.
That's what we're about.
Things are looking up. The other exciting bit of news that happened like a month ago, but we have never talked about on the podcast.
We talked about this.
Did we?
I think so.
No, I think we talked about it personally. I don't think we talked about it.
No, I yelled about this.
About Quade Green?
Yeah. We didn't really talk about it, but let's.
He has subsequently enrolled in the UW as they began the...
In regards to the conversation about...
Yes.
What's his name?
Jacob Eason. Yes, it came up Jacob in that context.
What's his name? Jake.
He's enrolled at UW for the winter quarter as a transfer from Kentucky, will become eligible after the first quarter next season as a junior, just in time for the Huskies to play in the Diamond Head Classic, which actually worked out quite nicely for them to have their non-conference tournament played so late over the Christmas break. They'll probably be favored in that tournament, which also includes Houston, who's quite good this year, but has several seniors,
so he's
and Georgia Tech
right now, but won't be able to play until when?
After the first quarter of 2019-20.
Like, what does that mean? December or something?
Yeah, after finals. So mid-December. Cool. I mean, that's... Yeah. Them's the rules. Quade Green was ranked the 24th overall prospect by ESPN Recruiting Nation in 2017 and the number 5 point guard in the country. He was outstanding in the 2016 Nike EYBL as a rising senior, posted the best assist rate that I have for any player in EYBL. I think the stats that I've used Neil Johnson from ESPN Stats and Info provided to me, I think those cover like 2012 through 2017 now of EYBL play. So like, you know, a lot of top point guards are in there, and Quade Green had the best assist rate of any of them. So what's surprising is that, you know, that really didn't transfer for him at Kentucky. Translate, I guess, is what I was looking for. He just had 4.2 assists per 40 minutes as a freshman, playing off and along Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and 5.3 so far this year as a sophomore. He started 13 games as a freshman, mostly in non-conference play, and still averaged 25.6 minutes overall. That had dropped to 17.8 minutes per game this year, including just 18 combined in his last two games.
When did he announce that he was transferring?
After the first quarter.
So he'd played games
early
on. Or
it was probably the first semester in their case. Yeah.
And it was basically like, I'm not part of this rotation, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Huh. What went wrong for Quade Green at Kentucky?
I mean, this often happens to guys at Kentucky, that they just recruit so many players that they recruit over you. Then, you know, if you don't, you know, players don't generally stick around for more than 2 years at Kentucky because of this problem. We've seen a lot of very good players transfer out of there, most notably Kyle Wiltshire, who ended up being terrific at Gonzaga. It's nice to see the Huskies snag an impact transfer. Yeah. This is not a thing they've had very often in their history.
Wow. So do you think that him being ranked number 24 in 2017, he's the highest ranked UW player since?
Markel Fultz.
I guess it wasn't that long ago.
Remember when we signed the number one player in back-to-back classes, but then fired the coach and didn't get the guy, which, you know.
Back-to-back, who's the other one?
Michael Porter. Remember? Remember him? Someday he'll play basketball again. I look forward to it.
This year?
That could be referring to either Fultz or Porter. Word is, by the way, that Porter has been looking great in practices in Denver.
Really?
Yeah, they're very excited about
it. Such a good pick. God, you gave the best team in the West, like one of the best picks in the draft.
Yeah, shouldn't have let that happen.
Man, the Warriors better watch out.
Did you see the game tonight?
What did the final end up being in that game?
I believe 37.
How many points did they score total, though?
Oh, the Warriors?
Yeah.
They didn't quite get to 150, I don't think. Which people sometimes ask, like, is an NBA team going to score 200 points? And the answer is no, because they can put up, they only got 142. They weren't even the highest scoring team of the night.
Wow.
Philadelphia had 149, and Atlanta had 142. It was a big night in the NBA.
Atlanta?
Against Oklahoma City.
Did they won that game?
They did.
There we go.
You think Oklahoma City scored more than 142 in regulation? Wow. Anyways, about Quade Green. So he did shoot 39% on threes in his 2 years at Kentucky. That's going to be a huge boost to a UW team that has not had much.
Two-ish years? Because, like, really, he didn't have a full year there this year.
Fine, year and a half. And, I mean, we had no idea who was going to be point guard next year. I mean, obviously, the Huskies have some young prospects. Elijah Hardy could have been in the mix there. But you feel a lot better about that position with Quad A Green there.
I mean, it's a game changer for this team. Like, when we look at the Husky team for the mostly 2020 season, you're seeing that Matisse Thybulle is gone, David Crisp is gone, Noah Dickerson is gone.
Dominic Green.
Dominic Green's a senior also?
Yes.
Thank God. Sorry. Apologies to Dominic.
I mean, you had some, you know, Naz Carter and Hamir Wright, and then the freshmen who aren't playing very much.
Hopefully Jalen comes back.
Yep.
Plus Naz Carter, Hamir Wright.
And then we'll see. We'll see which of the freshmen step up or who is incoming freshmen can play.
The addition and the things that we know about college basketball is that experience matters almost more than anything.
Yes.
So adding Quad A Green to that team is so huge.
Especially getting experienced talent.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to be careful.
Can I add a no shit in there?
Yes.
Experience doesn't even, I mean, yes. Like when you're talking about Brandon Burmeister experience, like, yes, maybe that doesn't matter. But experience from players who are actually playing.
Well, I mean, there are players who, even with experience, don't become as good as talented freshmen.
And those players are David Crisp. No, sorry.
I wasn't going to name any names. I mean, I think that, you know, if you think of Quad A Green as like one of the five best point guards in the country, you know, that sort of level, that's probably going to overrate what he gives the Huskies. He didn't quite play up to that in Kentucky, but he's going to be a good player. And Hopkins is familiar with him. He recruited him at Syracuse, which was one of Quad A Green's, you know, finalists, I think, in 2017. So, you know, this seems like a great fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can't wait for December 2019.
It's less than a year away. It's barely an MLS season away.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.